Imagine a customer in Berlin. They decide to buy your software today. They actually have the money in their account. You know, they type their credit card number into your checkout page and they click buy.
Right, the perfect scenario.
Yeah, exactly. But in the 50 milliseconds it takes to process that request, the system just automatically rejects it. And not because they lack the funds, but simply because your business is based in Texas.
It is so frustrating to watch happen.
It really is. And that is the reality of international payments right now. So, welcome to this deep dive. Think of this as a strategy session. I am your analyst co-host, and sitting across the table is our lead senior payments advisor here at MyPay Advisor.
It is great to be here. We have a highly targeted agenda today, and it is entirely focused on stopping that exact revenue leak you just described.
We really do. We are speaking directly to you, the US-based merchant. Specifically, if you are an operator processing anywhere between $25,000 and $5 million in monthly card volume, you really need to listen closely. Today, we are opening up the core topic of acquirer selection for international cards.
And we are looking strictly at the 2026 cost reality. Because, well, that 2026 reality is pretty stark. If you sell to buyers in three or more countries, and you route every single transaction through a single U.S. acquirer just out of convenience, you're actively leaving money on the table every single day.
Let's anchor to the baseline numbers right away so everyone knows what is actually at stake here.
Yeah.
Right now, cross-border declines are running 5 to 15% higher than domestic declines on the exact same card networks.
Which is huge.
It is massive. And on top of that, cross-border interchange trims an extra 0.401, 0.20% per swipe straight out of your margin.
It is just a massive margin drain. So our mission for this deep dive is to break down the actual mechanics of those cross-border fees under the hood.
Right.
We are going to quantify the revenue leak you are likely experiencing right now. And finally, we will provide a concrete operator playbook you can use this very week to fix the problem.
Okay, so to fix that margin drain, we first need to understand exactly how the card networks flag and, you know, penalize these international transactions. Because this all happens in milliseconds. Most merchants never even see it occur.
No, they do not. It is completely invisible to them.
So break down exactly what happens when that Berlin customer hits submit. I want to know the physical routing.
It is actually a fascinating chain of events. An international card transaction touches five distinct parties in roughly 2 seconds.
Wow, five parties?
Yeah, five. You have the cardholder, the merchant, the acquirer, the card network like Visa or MasterCard, and finally the issuing bank. Each one of those parties has a fee, a risk model, and a regulatory footprint.
Okay.
And all of that, all of those variables, they shift based entirely on where your acquirer is licensed.
Hold on. I want to make sure I understand this routing issue. Are you saying that if I buy a software subscription from a German company right now, my bank here in Texas is looking at the German acquirer identification number and automatically assuming it is a higher fraud risk?
Yes.
Just because it is overseas?
That is exactly what happens. Let's put this into perspective with your example of a U.S. software merchant. A buyer in Berlin presents a card issued by a German bank.
Okay, tracking.
The very first digits of that card, which we call the bank identification number, or BIN, encode the country and the product type. Your U.S. acquirer takes that card data, attaches its own U.S. BIN to the authorization request, and sends it to the network.
Okay, so now the network has two completely different geographic tags sitting on the exact same request.
Precisely. Visa or MasterCard reads both of those bins. They see a German issuer bin and a U.S. acquirer bin. And because those do not match geographically, the transaction is immediately flagged as cross-border.
And that is when the trouble starts.
Right. The network forwards that request to the German issuing bank.
Yeah.
The German bank looks at the U.S. acquirer country, bumps up the risk score simply because it is a foreign transaction, and applies a much tighter approval threshold.
So the system is structurally designed to penalize the transaction just because the two banks are in different regions.
It is a structural penalty baked right into the system. Mm. Let's look at the fee impact using the public rules for Visa and MasterCard.
Let's do it.
Visa publishes completely separate interchange schedules for domestic and international categories.
Wow.
If you were hitting their interregional consumer credit category, that interchange runs about 1.20% plus fixed fees.
Wow.
But then you have the cross-border surcharges layered on top of that.
And MasterCard does the exact same thing, right?
Oh, yeah, they do.
They apply a cross-border assessment fee, which is often listed on statements as an international acquirer fee. I think that sits at roughly 0.60%.
Exactly. And we cannot forget the hidden foreign exchange margin.
Oh, right, the FX spread.
Yeah, when the cross-border settlement happens, The foreign exchange spread averages 1% to 3%. That depends entirely on your acquirer correspondent banking setup.
You know, I look at this and it feels a lot like using my cell phone overseas.
That is a great analogy.
It is like my phone trying to ping a cell tower in London. The data still moves, but my U.S. carrier is going to charge me a massive roaming penalty just because the transaction is touching the wrong geographic node.
That is a perfect way to think about it. And if we connect this to the bigger picture of your monthly accounting, it becomes very visible. Operators listening to this really need to pull up their latest processing statement.
What are they looking for?
Look for a line item called the International Service Assessment, or ISA. It usually sits flat at 0.80 to 1.00% on every single non-US charge. That is the literal penalty for using the wrong geographic node.
Okay, so what does this all mean for the actual sales process? Because, I mean, taking a fee out of a completed sale is painful, but it is really only half the story. The larger problem is the sales that never complete at all.
This is where we get into approval rate decay. The fees are bad, sure, but issuer declines are where the real revenue destruction happens.
We have data on this, actually. The Federal Reserve Payments Research has documented this gap extensively. They show that domestic approval rates usually sit in the high 80s to mid 90s.
Right.
But cross-border approval rates trail those domestic rates by single-digit percentage points.
And that gap gets significantly worse on consumer credit cards when the ticket size climbs above $100.
Really? Above $100 it drops off?
Oh, yeah. The foreign issuer looks at a larger purchase from a foreign acquirer, and their fraud algorithm just shuts it down completely. It is just too risky for them.
But the fraud algorithms are only one layer of friction here. We also have to talk about the regulatory friction, specifically in Europe.
Yes, the European Union. They have PSD2 regulations, which mandate strong customer authentication, or SCA, on most consumer card payments above 30 euros.
Okay, stop right there. You just threw a bunch of acronyms at me. PSD2, SCA, what is the actual mechanism here? Like, if I am the buyer sitting on my couch in Munich, what does strong customer authentication actually look like on my screen?
Good question. What it means is the buyer cannot just click buy and be done.
Right.
They click buy, and suddenly they get a pop-up window redirecting them to their bank. The bank demands a 6-digit SMS code or a biometric scan on their phone. That is the 3D secure authentication mechanism.
And from my own personal experience, half the time that text message takes forever to arrive, or the banking app just glitches out entirely.
Exactly.
So the buyer just closes the laptop and you lose the sale.
That friction alone causes 5 to 8 points of decline. Buyers get annoyed or distracted, and they just abandon the cart. But here is the critical part about geographic nodes. If you use a local EU acquirer, that acquirer can request something called transaction risk analysis exemptions.
TRA exemptions.
Yes, they request TRA exemptions on behalf of the merchant.
How does that actually work in practice?
They can essentially tell the issuing bank, hey, look, our overall fraud rates are very low. We are asking you to waive the 3D secure requirement for this specific transaction over 30 euros.
Oh, well.
Yeah, it allows the transaction to bypass those heavy authentication steps entirely.
But a U.S. acquirer typically cannot request those exemptions, right?
They cannot. Which means every single EU charge you run through a U.S. acquirer is basically forced through that 3D secure authentication flow. You are guaranteeing a worse checkout experience for your European buyers.
That is just brutal for conversion. And it gets even worse when we look at currency conversion. The Nielsen report published some fascinating data on dynamic currency conversion, or DCC.
DCC is a classic trap. Some U.S. acquirers default to billing the foreign cardholder in U.S. dollars at a heavily marked up foreign exchange rate.
Right.
The checkout page shows the buyer a U.S. dollar price with a rough estimate of what it will cost in their home currency.
And according to the Nielsen report data, presenting that DCC estimate correlates to a 3 to 6 point lift in cart abandonment for EU buyers.
It is huge.
They see the confusing currency math, they feel like they're getting ripped off on the exchange rate, and they just leave. Now, I have to ask a question I hear from operators all the time when we talk about this specific issue. If the currency conversion is causing cart abandonment, can the merchant just price their goods in euros or British pounds on the website to avoid this whole mess?
That is a very common misconception. We really have to clarify the difference between multi-currency pricing and actual local acquiring.
Okay, break that down.
You can display a euro price on your website, sure. And you can even charge a euro price through your U.S. acquirer. But doing that does not change the routing mechanics at all. The German issuing bank still sees a U.S. acquirer bin.
So the transaction is still tagged as cross-border, regardless of what currency symbol is sitting on the final receipt.
100%. The currency alone does not change the interchanged category or the risk profile. The issuer still applies the cross-border risk model, and the network still applies the cross-border fee.
So the European bank rejects the card because it does not trust the U.S. routing. That explains the lost sales perfectly. But what is this actually costing a typical mid-market company in hard dollars?
Let's run the numbers.
Yeah, let's take a standard SaaS business and run the math.
Let's do a worked example using a standard profile for 2026. Imagine a business-to-consumer SaaS company selling productivity software. They process $1.2 million U.S. dollars in monthly card volume.
Okay.
And they have an average ticket size of $89.
Okay, wait. Let me write this down to make sure I'm tracking the math here. So they have 1.2 million in total volume. Let's break down their geographic spread. Let's say 35% of their sales are in the U.S.
Okay, 35% domestic.
And then 25% in the EU, 20% in the UK, and 20% rest of world.
Right. So if 35% is domestic, that means 65% of their volume is international. That is $780,000 of non-U.S. volume every single month.
Got it.
Currently, this company routes all of that through a single U.S. acquirer.
Let's calculate the current cost on that $780,000. We have to factor in the cross-border interchange, the network assessments, the acquirer markup, and that 1.5% foreign exchange margin you mentioned earlier.
Right, the whole stack.
When you stack all of that up, it costs roughly $32,466 per month.
Which is an effective rate of 4.16% strictly on that international volume. But remember, the cost is only half the equation here. We have to look at the approval rate, too.
Wait, let's pause right there. You just threw a lot of numbers at me. If I'm hearing you right, on an $89 software subscription, the foreign bank is basically saying no to almost 1 in 5 buyers just because of the U.S. zip code on the merchant account.
Yes. On this single U.S. acquirer setup, the approval rate sits at 81%.
That is terrible.
It is. That means out of the $780,000 attempted, about $148,000 is declined outright. And based on industry averages, half of those declines are recoverable good demand.
Real buyers.
Real buyers who just got caught in the cross-border friction.
So the merchant decides to introduce a solution. They split their routing using local acquiring. They map the EU slice of their volume to an EU-licensed acquirer, someone like Adyen or Worldline. They map the UK slice to a UK acquirer, like Barclaycard or Worldpay UK. And they keep the rest of the world on their existing US acquirer.
Exactly. Now let's run the new math on that setup. For the EU volume, they now get intra-regional interchange rates and zero cross-border surcharges.
Right.
For the UK volume, they get domestic rates. When you combine the new EU cost, the new UK cost, and the remaining U.S. acquirer cost, the total non-U.S. fee drops to roughly $16,860 per month.
That is a monthly savings of over $15,000. Annually, just the fee savings alone come out to $187,272.
But then we add in the recovered volume. This is the best part. By using local acquirers, the approval rate on that EU and UK traffic lifts from 81% to roughly 88%.
Wow. So that recovers about $50,000 per year in good volume that was previously being rejected by the foreign issuers. When you combine the fee savings and the recovered revenue, the total annual lift for this business is $237,000.
That is nearly $250,000 dropping straight to the bottom line.
Incredible.
And they did it without changing their product or acquiring a single new customer.
That is massive. But I have to ask the obvious operational question here. Managing multiple acquirers in different regions just sounds like an accounting and technical nightmare.
It really does sound like one.
We are talking about different payout schedules, different reporting dashboards. How does a lean merchant team actually handle this without hiring a massive finance department to reconcile it all?
That is the hurdle most operators fear. But the technology has actually solved this. The answer is a payments orchestration layer. You use a tool like Spreedly, Primer, or Garvey.
I see. Think of a payments orchestration layer like a highly efficient mail sorting room. Instead of handing all your international mail to the U.S. Postal Service and just hoping they figure out how to get it to Germany, this software reads the zip code on the envelope in milliseconds.
Yes, great analogy.
It instantly hands the German letters directly to the German Postal Service and the U.K. letters to the Royal Mail. You still just drop it all in one single mailbox, but the routing is optimized instantly.
That is exactly how it works. The orchestration layer sits right between your checkout page and the acquiring banks. When a customer clicks buy, the software reads the issuer bin end country.
Okay.
In under 50 milliseconds, it routes the charge to the correct local acquirer. The EU card goes to the EU acquirer. The US card goes to the US acquirer.
Okay, that abstracted away concept sounds great in a pitch deck. But anyone who has implemented new financial tech knows there is always a catch. How long does an integration like Spreedly or Primer actually take for a lean engineering team? Are we talking a 2-week sprint or a 6-month headache?
That is a very fair pushback. It is certainly not an overnight flip. Implementing an orchestration layer usually takes a dedicated engineering team about 48 weeks.
Okay, that is not terrible.
It depends on how complex your legacy code is. You have to update your API calls and test the routing logic thoroughly. But once it is built, the ongoing maintenance is minimal.
And what does the merchant actually see on the back end once it is live?
The merchant gets a single, unified ledger. You log into one dashboard to see all your global transactions, handle all your refunds, and manage your reporting across all the different acquirers. The daily complexity is just completely removed for the finance team.
Okay, that brings us to the ultimate operator question. We have broken down the problem, the routing mechanics, and the hard math. Now we need to give you your operational marching orders for the week, based on everything we have discussed today.
We have a strict 4-step playbook you need to follow in chronological order.
Step 1. Tomorrow morning, you need to contact your current payment processor. Ask them for a report showing your approval rates broken down by issuer beyond country.
You are looking for anomalies in that data. Sort that list by volume. Any country that represents more than 5% of your total volume and has an approval rate more than 5 points below your U.S. baseline is your immediate target for local acquiring.
Step 2. You need to audit your own bills. Pull your last 3 processing statements. You are hunting for specific line items. Look for international service assessment, cross-border transaction fee, ISA, or IAF.
Sum those specific fees up and divide them by your non-US volume. That percentage is your cross-border surcharge rate. It is the absolute floor on what local acquiring can save you before you even factor in the revenue from approval rate lifts.
Step 3. Once you know your target regions, you need to request quotes from 2 local acquirers per region, demand interchange plus pricing. Do not accept blended rates where they hide their markup, and you need to ask them for specific numbers on their transaction risk analysis exemption thresholds for European regulations.
That last point is crucial. A real local acquirer will give you a hard number on their fraud threshold for those TRA exemptions we talked about. A reseller or a suboptimal partner will hedge and just give you generic marketing speak.
Step 4. Once you select a partner, you test the waters. Do not cut over all your traffic at once. Route just 20% of your target region traffic through the new local acquirer for 30 days.
Compare the approval rate, the settlement timing, and the net effective rate against your old setup. The financial lift will be undeniably visible by week 2 of that test.
Local acquiring is honestly one of the highest impact levers available to an international merchant today. It is rare to find a strategy that recovers up to 8 points of approval rate without requiring you to change your product or your pricing structure at all.
It really highlights a broader philosophy for scaling a business. We started this conversation talking about default settings, that feeling of buying a laptop, turning it on, and just accepting how it is configured out of the box because it technically works.
Exactly. It works, but it costs you.
It forces you to look at your entire operation. Local acquiring proves that convenience has a massive price tag. It makes you wonder what other default, out-of-the-box settings in your tech stack are quietly draining your profitability right now simply because you never paused to question the initial setup.